First Kings chapter 12. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel were come to Shechem to make him king. And it came to pass, when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard of it, for he was fled from the presence of King Solomon, and Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt, that they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the congregation of Israel came and spake unto Rehoboam, saying, Rehoboam, Jeroboam. Two different guys, no relation. Remember, we've been following through Solomon's life. Last chapter, chapter 11, ended with the death of Solomon. Nation exceedingly wealthy, kingdom with a few annoyances, different people that had been talked about at the end of last chapter that had risen up and given Solomon problems, mainly because he had led the nation into idolatry by sacrificing to all the strange gods of his strange wives. He had 700 wives, 300 concubines, and they all were from foreign lands that he wasn't supposed to intermarry with. And they led his heart astray, just like God had said, don't marry those women, because if you do, they'll lead your heart astray. And lo and behold, he was telling the truth. So Solomon, I don't know how you have 700 wives and one kid, but he did. At least one that's mentioned. None of the other ones are. And as we look at the kingdom, where it goes, there's no mention of any of them vying for power. So as far as we know, 700 wives, one kid. And we know he reigned, Solomon, for 40 years. And he, at the beginning of his reign is when he married the Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter and then started marrying all the wives. Rehoboam, we'll see, is 41 when he starts to reign, which means he was born before Solomon took up the throne, so he must have come from the first wife. And, so Rehoboam, Solomon's son. Jeroboam, if you remember from last week, he was a guy that Solomon had noticed when he was rebuilding one of the cities as being industrious, and he set him over some things. And Ahijah the prophet came to Jeroboam one day in the field with a new robe, tore it into 12 pieces and gave him 10, and said, thus saith the Lord's going to take the 12 tribes of Israel, he's going to rip them, and he's going to give 10 to you, and then the last two he's going to leave for David's descendants. So Jeroboam has been picked out as one who is going to take over 10 of the 12 tribes. Now, right now, it's still, they're all together. They're all one big nation. And Solomon, of course, backsliding, didn't really like that when he'd heard about it. So he chased him, or tried to anyways, acted a lot like Saul. And Jeroboam had gone down to Egypt for safety. So now Solomon is dead. Rehoboam seems to be the next one in line. So he heads to Shechem, and all Israel comes there to crown him as king. And Jeroboam shows up, and he's there with everybody. And they spake unto Rehoboam, and in verse 4 it says, thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father, and his heavy yoke which he put on us lighter, and we will serve thee. Thy father made our yoke grievous. Solomon, we'd read, in building the temple and in doing all the things, he had raised taxes. His table was huge. He'd like 14,000 people he fed every single day, and each tribe would take a turn providing the food for that. A lot of sheep, a lot of oxen, a lot of money involved. Plus, there was the forced labor groups that went out and worked on the temple, and so he took a lot out of them, a lot of taxes, a lot of forced labor. And so the people now say to his son, look, you're going to be king if you will just take it easy on us. Just tell us you're going to lighten up a little bit, we'll serve you. And it's interesting to me to see that Jeroboam is part of that. Now, he has already heard the Lord say to him, you're going to get 10 of the 12 tribes. He doesn't try to take it right now. It's to his credit. He goes to the king. He's with everybody else, and he says, you know, are you going to lighten up or not? And he said unto them, depart yet for 3 days, and then come again to me. And the people departed. Because he doesn't know what to say. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, how do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, if thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and will serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. Now, these are the guys, this is dad's counselors. Remember dad, the smartest man ever in the whole world? If these are guys that the smartest man ever picked to give him counsel, perhaps, if you don't know what to do, makes sense to listen to them. They might, they're old men. Solomon trusted them. What do you want me to do? And they say, if you'll be a servant to the people. And truthfully, that is the right thing for a leader to be. In all cases, a leader of a family, a leader of a household, you men, leader of a church, leader of your company, wherever it is, leader of your class in school, is to be a servant leader. Jesus Christ, Philippians 2:5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant. A servant. That's, and they say, look, you want to be a king that these people will follow, serve them. Love them. Lead the people. Go first and humble yourself, be a servant king. They'll follow you anywhere. But he forsook the counsel of the old men in verse 8, which they had given him, and he consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, which stood before him. Let's go to my buddies, you know, the young ones that have grown up with me. Here I am in the palace of the richest king ever, and I'm growing up with my buddies who are obviously wealthy and spoiled like me, and I've got everything I ever wanted. They'll probably make good counselors. Why don't I ask them what they think? And the young men that were grown up with him, well, verse 9, and he said to them, what counsel give you we? Give you that we may answer this people that have spoken to me, saying, make the yoke which my father did put upon us lighter. And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, thou shalt speak unto the people that spake unto thee, saying, thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter for us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. Think about that, and we'll just keep going. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. You think dad was bad? You've seen nothing. You think he gave you a hard time? You're crying about his whip? I'm going to hit you with scorpions. You'll notice he asks a lot of people, but we don't see him praying at all, which I have a feeling he probably learned from his dad. Because truthfully, dad was praying, well, actually, the reason why is dad was praying to everybody. Dad would go into any old altar, doesn't matter. Oh, this mom over here or stepmom so-and-so's got her temple to this god. Dad will go in there and burn some incense. Then he'll head over to the temple of the Lord. Then he'll head over to Ashtoreth. Then he'll go to Baal. Then he'll go to Chemosh. Then, and when a kid sees that it means nothing to the parent, they don't bother with any of it. It's not like they're going to go and pick up all of the same gods. They just don't even care. It's worthless to them. So he didn't even bother to pray. He just asked people what they think. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day as the king had appointed, saying, come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people roughly and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him and spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy. He apparently left out the little finger comment. He thought that was going too far, but he did go with the scorpion one. My father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Now, come on. Every politician in the world knows, even if that's what you're going to do, you lie about it. I mean, you don't tell them you're going to do that. You don't tell them you're going to punish them and you're going to rip them off and you're going to make things worse. You promise, you know, a chicken in every pod and a greater tax rebate and everything that you can promise. Then you put it to them when they don't have a choice. That's how you do it. He's not even smart enough to do that. And he says, oh, no. I'm going to tell you what. You thought Solomon was something. You wait till you see me. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people. Now, you look at that and you think, I don't know a whole lot about politics. I certainly don't know anything about being king. But I know if a bunch of people come to me and I'm wanting them to listen to me and maybe support me, I'm going to say nice stuff. It's not rocket science, right? I mean, you pretty much all, as soon as you heard that counsel, like, I'm going to hit you with scorpions, you thought, gee, that really didn't make a whole lot of sense. What were you possibly thinking? Why would you be that dumb? Well, this is why. Verse 15. The king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying, which the Lord spake by Ahijah the Shilonite unto Jeroboam the son of Nebat. See, the Lord was in this because he had said, no, the kingdom is going to be tore up because of what Solomon did. Because of what Solomon did, the kingdom is going to be tore up. And so all of this stuff that's going on with with Rehoboam is because the Lord's got his hand in it. And, you know, you look at Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. I like that verse, personally. I like verses like that that say, whenever I'm coming up against somebody who's in a position of authority over me, I really need to talk to the Lord. Because if I talk to the Lord, he can take people and give you favor or not give you favor. You know, it was really cool. The other day, I had to go down to, bring some documentation to Department of Human Services the other day. I don't know if you've ever stood in line and waited in there to go meet. I don't like going in there, you know. I don't know. I didn't look like any of the other 40 people waiting with me like going in there either. But you know, I'm kind of waiting, and my paperwork is not exactly what it was supposed to be. And I had made a couple mistakes earlier on. I forgot to send a check for something I was supposed to send a check for, so I was late, and then I had to prove some stuff, and it's like, you know, so I'm going in there. And you're praying, Lord, you know, I blew it. Lord, please give me favor. And I walk through the door, and, you know, they come out, and they call your first name. They don't call your whole name because they don't want to let anyone else know who you are, but they call your first name, and so this woman comes out, and I follow her down, you know. And then shuts the door, and she says, I listen to you every day on the radio. And you think, oh, Lord, you're good, you know. And she says, I read my Bible, and it's so great. And I'm thinking, that's awesome. You know, the Lord can just take a situation and put a person in there when you're least expecting it. And he can take the king's heart and turn it. And here the king's heart was to be stupid. The Lord used that to divide the kingdom. Look what happens. It says, so when all Israel saw that the king hearkened not unto them, the people answered the king, saying, what portion have we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to thine own house, David. So Israel departed unto their tents. Because they looked at him and they said, look, he doesn't have a heart like his grandfather. He doesn't have a heart like David. He certainly doesn't have smarts like his dad, because he never would have said that if he was half as smart as his dad. So he's got the wrong heart. He's got no brains. We're not following him. I want no part of this guy. You know what? You're from the tribe of Judah. You're from the family of David. David, you can have him, okay? We're going home. And they all just left. Now, what do you do if you're the king, or you're about to be made king? You think this is your big day, and everybody says, nah, we'll see you later. And they just go. Like, we don't even care what you think. They just leave him. It says, but as for the children of Israel, which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. He was from the tribe of Judah. That's where Jerusalem was. And so he was still king there. It says, then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the tribute, he was the tax collector, and all Israel stoned him with stones that he died. See, that's how you deal with the IRS right there. You get the rocks out and now. You know? Therefore, King Rehoboam made speed to get him up to his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day, or at least unto the day of this writing. See, what happens here is the kingdom is divided. From this point out, Israel is now going to have Judah, which is going to have the tribe of Benjamin in with it in the south, and that's going to be Judah. And then the north is Israel, which is going to be the other 10 tribes. And they're going to stay split until eventually, because of idolatry, Israel and the north, the 10 tribes, get hauled off by the Assyrians into captivity, and they don't come back. Then, because of idolatry, Judah and the south will get conquered by Babylon, and they'll get hauled away for a while, but then after 70 years, they will come back. It's not like every member of one tribe was gone, because there were people who lived in the cities that were from various tribes. So it wasn't like any, you know, there's some of the wackos that will try to say, well, we're now Ephraim, and they're not Ephraim, they're not Jewish, I'm sorry. But those tribes stayed around. But by and large, the 10 from the north end up going away. Interesting, Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 16 says this. The Lord talking to Ezekiel, moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick, and write upon it, for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companions. Then take another stick and write upon it, for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions. And join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by these? Say unto them, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his fellows, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be in one land. And the sticks whereon thou writest shall be in thine hand before thine eyes. And say unto them, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, whither they be gone, and will gather them on every side and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel." That's right after the prophecy of the dry bones, when a nation, you know, can a nation be born in a day? And when Ezekiel sees these dry bones and he prophesies to the dry bones and the flesh comes on them, then he prophesies to the wind and they come back to life again. And how Israel as a nation gets scattered and dispersed after 70 AD and they're gone. There's no Israel for 1900 years. And then in one day in 1948 after World War II, when all of the world saw the images of the Holocaust, of bulldozers piling over heaps of bodies and everything that had happened, the world that by and large has been against the Jews had a moment of conscience and voted narrowly to give Israel back to the Jews again. And now it's no more the tribes in the north and the tribes in the south. It's one land again. And that Ezekiel 37, that part of it, of course, it's going to talk about one king and David ruling over them. But that part of it has been fulfilled. 1948, Israel's back in the land. They're one again. So this, back in 1 Kings 12, where it says the house of David, you know, has been divided unto this day, well, not anymore. In verse 20, it says, "And it came to pass, when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king over all Israel. And there was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. And when Rehoboam was come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin. 84,000 chosen men, 180,000 guys, he puts together an army, which were warriors to fight against the house of Israel to bring the kingdom again to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon." Rehoboam said, "Hey, no. I'm going to be king over all this. I don't care what's going up there. You can say that Jeroboam's your guy, but I'm going up there." And he builds an army of 180,000 guys to go have a civil war. "But the word of God came unto Shemaiah, the man of God, saying, Speak unto Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and unto all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the remnant of the people, saying, Thus saith the Lord, you shall not go up, nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Return every man to his house, for this thing is of me. They hearken therefore to the word of the Lord, and return to depart according to the word of the Lord." They decided to listen to the prophet, and they didn't go to war. So the kingdom is divided. Rehoboam's in the south, Jerusalem with Judah and Benjamin, the rest of them up north. And Jeroboam, and again, remember now, Jeroboam was the guy who was just being industrious, and the Lord called him out, had the prophet go to him, say, "I'm going to give you 10 tribes, and I'll tell you what, if you will follow me with all your heart, you won't turn aside to other gods, I'll set up your throne just like I would have done, just like I did David's. I'll set up your throne forever." I mean, he had that promise. He had God telling him out of the blue, when he was just an overseer, that he was going to be ruler of the 10 tribes of Israel. He wasn't part of the family line. I mean, it was like somebody coming up to you or I and saying, "You know what, you're going to be president." And you think, "Yeah, right." And then next thing you know, you're president. You got to be thinking, "Wow, I must be in the Lord's hand. Wow, the Lord must have his hand on me. He must have arranged all this stuff." Or you'd think that's what you'd think. But that's not what he thought, because look what he does. "Then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim, and he dwelt therein," set up his kingdom there. "He went out from thence and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, Now shall the kingdom return to the house of David." Oh, no, it's all going to be gone. God said he'd give it to you. All you got to do is follow him. No, now he's worrying. He said in his heart, he isn't talking to God, he's just talking to himself. That's pretty much a mistake. "If this people go up to do sacrificing in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah." See, because he said, look, I know that how this works. All Israel, 3 mandatory feasts a year. Was it Tabernacles, Unleavened Bread, and Pentecost, I think, are the 3 feasts where they had to go every year if they were within any distance. And so the temple was there. There was one temple where the ark was. That's where you'd go to worship. Well, that was down in the south in Jerusalem. And he thinks, if the people keep going back down there, because I'm king of the north, if he goes down to the south, then they're going to make him king over all of us, and they're going to kill me. So I got to do something about that. I can't have people going down to worship the Lord anymore. "Whereupon the king took counsel," of who we don't know, certainly not of God, "and he made 2 calves of gold. And he said unto them, It's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." and he set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. One he put at the top, the other one he put in the south, and he said, look, guys, it's too much. Oh, so far to go. Let's make this a little more convenient. Here, I just happen to have this golden calf. Now, when you hear golden calf, you should go, you'd think you'd see, because back in Exodus chapter 32, the Ten Commandments have been given. Moses is up there talking to God, receiving further instruction. The people get restless. They get bored. And so they talk to Aaron, the high priest, and say, that guy, we don't know what happened to Moses. Make us a god. It says, and so they broke off all their golden earrings. They give them to Aaron. And in verse 4 of chapter 32 of Exodus, it says, and he received them at their hand. He fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. They took the calf, and they said, that's the Lord. They didn't say, look, we have new gods. They said, no, this is God. This is the Lord. This is the one that brought us up out of Egypt. The calf. It was a big golden cow. You thought it was a pillar of fire and of smoke. No, it was a big shiny cow. That's what your God is all this time. And then Aaron saw it, and he built an altar before it. And Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. And they rose up and they offered burnt offerings and then they got naked. And if you follow the story, you know, Moses come down, he broke all Ten Commandments in one throw and 3,000 people died. Made a golden calf. Well now, here we are hundreds of years down the road. And Jeroboam says, we need to do something. We got to set something up so people can worship, but they don't go down to Jerusalem again. I know. We'll do two. We'll make them convenient because church needs to be convenient. You understand that. You can't expect people to go a long way and worship. We want to make it so it fits what they need. So we're gonna throw up these two calves. Now, the thing that they're doing, calling them the Lord, it's like they don't even remember the Ten Commandments. Exodus chapter 20. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me, in my presence, nothing else. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that's in heaven or that's in earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow thyself down to them to serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. He's saying, don't try to carve me. Because if you make a cow and say that's me, then you think I'm a cow. I'm not a cow. There's nothing that you can make that's like me. I am beyond anything you can even comprehend. And as soon as you start making pictures of me, you really lose what I'm... You automatically exclude all kinds of attributes about me. That's why I hate those really pictures of Jesus. Because, well, first of all, they're mostly effeminate with a beard. They look like a circus thing. But then... When I say a picture of Jesus effeminate with a beard, you have one that comes into your mind. I grew up going to the Congo Church in East Millinocket, and there was a big one right in the front, long flowing hair. It was kind of soft airbrush painted thing, you know, of Jesus. And that's what comes to my mind. And so if I have to drive that image out of my head because it's there. And he wasn't like that. He was a builder, okay? He was a manly man. He worked outdoors. He lived outdoors. He was able to go in by himself, make a whip, kick over tables, drive people out of the temple. Richard Simmons didn't drive anybody out of the temple, okay? He was a manly guy. And yet when we make an image, we just completely lose. And then we start thinking about that image, and then we're focusing on that image. God says, I don't want any images. And now they're taking a cow. Why the cow? I don't understand. I like the cow. I mean, it is... If instead of horns it had... potatoes, it would be almost the complete creature because you got leather, you got milk, you got beef. You can make a cheese for the burger. If you just had maybe some wheat for hair to make the bread and then potatoes for horns, it would be the perfect thing, but it's nothing to worship. I mean, it's just a cow. And he makes these casts to make it convenient because people always want a god or worship that is convenient for them. I was looking at this the other day and it makes me tired, but I'll read it to you anyways. Saddleback Church. You know where Saddleback Church is? It's Rick Warren's church, purpose-driven church in California, I think. One of the largest churches in the world. Well, they have multiple worship venues. When you go to church there, you have to pick where you're going to go to worship because this is the main sanctuary, but then we have other side places you can go. Like you have the main service. For those who were looking for a Saddleback style of praise and worship with a full band, this praise is our venue for those who prefer to spend a little longer singing songs, and it features the Saddleback Gospel Choir. Overdrive is our venue featuring rock and roll music style. This is the venue for those that like their worship loud. Does God like worship loud, or does he not? Does he like the full choir, or does he not? Doesn't that matter, or is it for what the people want? Or you can go to Ohana. Come for the worship. Stay for the sounds of the islands. Experience hospitality and hugs. Learn to worship through singing or hula. Elevation is our venue for all singles. Singles worship. Because, you know, if you're not married, you might as well cruise for chicks while you worship the Lord. Let's combine the two. That's the most convenient, because that's, let's face it, you're single. That's why you're in church. You're looking for a mate. So we'll just put it all together where we get you all in one place so you're not hitting on some married woman. And, I mean, what is that? And you think, when did it become about what you want? Truthfully, when did it become about what I want? Shouldn't it be about what he wants? Shouldn't it be a reflection of how he's called us to worship him? Jeroboam's not stupid. He knows that if he does this, the people are going to go for it because it's self-centered. They're self-centered. They want something that's after what they want. And it says in verse 30, and this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. They went for it. You think, what's wrong with you people? Why didn't any of you read the Ten Commandments? See, what happened was he was able to say, well, you know, way back when we first come out of the land, Aaron made a calf of gold. So we're going to do it just like our fathers did, and we'll do the same thing. And apparently the people didn't know any better to say, did you keep reading? Because 3,000 people died. Do you really think that's a good idea? They didn't know any better. They didn't know the scriptures. They didn't know what happened. They didn't know their history. They didn't know how they'd gone astray. The funny thing is, the same thing happens today. One of the things that I have that I'm at odds with the Catholic Church about a little bit, or a lot bit, is the way they pray to Mary. But they don't. If you ask them, well, we don't pray to Mary. We just ask her to go to God for us. You know, that's what we do. We go to her because she's got a position. You know, she's full of grace, and she's not God. We don't worship Mary. We don't worship Mary. I know we carry little statues of her around all over the place, but we don't worship her. That's not worship. That's just venerating her. But anyways, but we pray to her, and it's like, why would you do that? Why would you think? Well, we'll tell you why. And one of the reasons they give as a scriptural reason for why they do it is they go to something that we just covered a few weeks ago, 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 19. And they say, well, you know, Bathsheba. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 19 says, Bathsheba therefore went to King Solomon to speak with him for Adonijah. And the king rose up to meet her and bowed himself to her and sat down on his throne, and he caused a seat to be set for the king's mother, Jesus' mother, king's mother, and she sat on his right hand. And then she said, I desire one small petition of thee, I pray thee. Say to me not nay. And the king said unto her, ask on, my mother, for I will not say thee nay. And so they say, well, see, there it is right there. The queen mother had a habit of sitting next to the king. And so you can go to the queen mother, and you can ask her for a question, just like this guy, Adonijah, whoever he was. He did too. And Solomon himself said, I'm not going to say no to you. So you can go to Mary, and Jesus, how can he say no to his mommy? No good boy is going to say no to his mommy, so you can go to mommy. Well, the funny thing is, it's like, have you even read that story? Because Adonijah is the one who's trying to usurp the throne. And he goes, and what he asks for is David's, the Shunammite that kept him warm, that was perceived as being his wife, although he never had any relations with her, so that he could usurp the throne of Solomon. When she asked that, Solomon said to his mom, why don't you just give him the whole kingdom too? I tell you what, he's spoken against his life, and he went out and had him killed for daring to do such a thing. If you read the whole story, you understand that's really not a good example to use, because if that's like praying to Mary, then I don't know that I'd be the first one to do it. The last guy who tried that got put to death. You really don't want to go there. But it's the same thing. Well, yeah, there was Aaron had a golden calf, didn't he? Did you keep reading? But if you don't know, well, yeah, I guess that's right. I guess they did. I seem to remember something about that in Sunday school. Okay, well, sure, if you say that's Lord, yeah, well, that's what they do. People went to worship with him. The problem is because the parents didn't do what they were supposed to do. Deuteronomy chapter 6. you shall, he says, these words which I command to thee this day shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sittest down in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand. They shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. You shall write them on the posts of your house and on your gates. And then when you get in the land, you won't turn astray. And he goes on, if you read the whole section, and he says, because I'm jealous. And they didn't. They didn't teach their kids. So the kids didn't know any better. So it gets to the point where some guy comes along and says, well, let's just worship a cow. And they say, okay, sure. See, that's why we study the Word, so that if I come in here someday dragging a cow, you can kill me right out in the parking lot. I give you perfect right. Just take me out there and just bury me in the back. Nobody has to know. Because if you read the Word, you know not to be fooled. And they didn't. They didn't know. And so Jeroboam sets up this cow to make it convenient for them, and they all go. And he made a house of high places, and he made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not the sons of Levi. We'll just take the dregs of society and make them priests to our calf. And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month, on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that's in Judah, only a month later, 15th day. That was supposed to be in the seventh month. This is the eighth month. And he offered upon the altar, so did he in Bethel, sacrificing unto the calves that he had made. And he placed in Bethel the priests and the high places which he had made. So he offered upon the altar which he made in Bethel, the 15th day of the eighth month, even the month which he had devised in his own heart. I think I'll make my own religious holiday. And I'll call it Kwanzaa. No, I'll call it Calf Day. And he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. And of course, if you're going to start your own religion, you might as well make yourself a priest, which he was, of course. He's the king, and now he's high priest of his own religion. It says, and behold, verse 1 of the next chapter, there came a man of God out of Judah by the word of the Lord unto Bethel. And Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. And he cried against the altar in the word of the Lord. And he said, O altar, altar, thus saith the Lord, behold, a child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name. And upon thee shall he offer the priests of the high places that burn incense upon thee, and men's bones shall be burnt upon thee. This prophet shows up right in the middle of everything. You know, it's nothing worse than making a shiny new calf, and you institute your own religion, and it's the first day, and you're doing the big day of the feast, and you're the king, and all the people are there, and you're burning incenses, and you're looking really regal, and some guy stands up and just starts yelling in the middle of it, prophesying against what you're doing. And he talks about the altar, and he says, thus saith the Lord, there's going to be somebody born named Josiah who's going to come, and he's going to take the priests that offer sacrifices on these altars, and he's going to offer them on these altars, and there's going to be men's bones burnt on them. The cool thing about that, it happens in 2 Kings chapter 23. 300 or more years later, somebody named Josiah is born who does exactly what the Lord said. 300 years later, exactly. It's pretty tough to name somebody by name. You think about that. Because you don't really get to pick that, you know. I mean, if somebody thought, maybe I'm going to be the guy, I think I'll change my name, it wouldn't be as impressive. But when somebody starts out as a Josiah and he ends up doing it, it's pretty impressive. So this guy comes and he just stands up and he's wrecking everything, prophesying right in the middle of this sacrifice. It says, and he gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be rent, and the ashes that are upon it shall be poured out. You're burning the meat on there, all of the animal. It's bubbling, it's dripping, it's gooing. There's ashes from the other animals. The fat's running all through it. You know, so you got this nice, like that can that hangs under your grill. You know what's in that after you barbecue, that can you put on the little hook? That's what's on the altar, okay? And it says, the sign is going to be that the ashes and stuff are going to pour out. Well, it came to pass when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, which had cried against the altar in Bethel, that he put forth his hand from the altar, because he's up there doing the sacrifice, saying, lay hold on him, and his hand, which he put forth against him, dried up so that he could not pull it into him again. And the altar also was rent, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. So this guy stands up out of the blue. He says this thing. Somebody's going to come and burn bones on that altar, and this will be the sign. That thing's going to split in half, and the ashes are going to pour out. And Jeroboam's ticked because he's wrecking his worship here. And so he turns around, and he throws a hand at, like, get him. And right when he says it, his arm just freezes, and it dries up. So his arm shrivels up, and it's stuck out. So now it's, and at the same time, the altar breaks, and all of the gooey, fatty, ashy, bloody stuff runs out, and everybody else says nothing. Because all of a sudden this guy stood up, and then you see the king, and he's like, you know, because his arm stuck out and he can't pull it back now. His tone changes amazingly. Just, he goes from being, sees him to, could you help me? A little help? You know, I mean, that's what he does. He says, the king answered and said unto the man of God, I entreat now the face of the Lord thy God. You know, all of a sudden it's the Lord. Would you just ask him for me? You seem to have some authority. Could you entreat the face of the Lord thy God and pray for me, that my hand might be restored me again? How about, could you pray for me and ask him not to freeze up the rest of me and send me to hell? Like, could you ask him to forgive me? No, none of that. Just, could you fix my hand? And the man of God besought the Lord, and the king's hand was restored him again and became as it was before. The problem was, is it was pretty sinful before, and it's still sinful now. And the king said unto the man of God, come home with me and refresh thyself, and I will give thee a reward. I like this answer. And the man of God said unto the king, if thou will give me half thine house, if you give me half your kingdom, I will not go in with thee, neither will I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so it was charged me by the word of the Lord, saying, eat no bread, nor drink water, nor turn again by the same way that thou camest. And the king's like, now he's like all Joe friendly and everything now that he's been healed. And come on back and I'll give you a reward for freezing my arm and breaking my altar and then praying and having it restored. And the guy's like, I don't care what you give me. There's no way, because the Lord told me specific. Now, this is still happening in front of everybody, okay? All of the northern tribes, everybody's there for this big sacrifice. And he says, I'm not going anywhere with you. Lord told me I'm not to eat anything from this place or drink anything from here. I'm not even supposed to go back the way I came. I'm supposed to go a different way. That's what the Lord told me. That's what I'm going to do. And truthfully, he didn't want any part of that. And I don't blame him, because he doesn't. There's a section in the church that is the ecumenical section of the church that thinks we just need to get along. And they just want to see all religions. Can't we just get the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Muslims and the Jews and every, let's just make one big camp and we'll all be a big happy family. You've seen the bumper sticker that says coexist on it, and like the C is the crescent moon and the O is the star David, and the, you know, it's all like, let's just, no. It says in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 verse 14, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? What communion has light with darkness? Does that mean we don't reach out to them and evangelize? Of course not. Does that mean that we don't have any friends? But any of you guys who know it, who had a life and then got saved, you now have something completely different between you and your old friends. You can't have that fellowship anymore, because they're going one way and you're going another, and it's just not the same. I still like my old friends. I wish they'd get saved, a lot of them. But I can't go and be buddies with them, because the things that bring them pleasure and the things that entertain them are not right for me. I know I can't do that anymore, and there should be no fellowship. And this guy, I'm not going to go eat in your house and have fellowship. You're sacrificing to idols. You haven't repented. You just got your hand healed. I'm not going home with you. Are you nuts? And then it gets weirder. So he went another way, verse 10, and returned not by the way that he came to Bethel. Now there dwelt an old prophet in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all the works that the man of God had done that day in Bethel. The words which he had spoken unto the king, they told also to their father. He's an old prophet. We don't know too much about him. We do know that he has some kids, and his kids are all over at the calf worship ceremony. So chances are, whatever kind of old prophet he was, he isn't much of an example to the kids. So they all come home and they say, Dad, you should have seen it. There was this guy and he showed up. And the old prophet's, you know, he's thinking, I remember when I was a boy. And he's, I was bold like that once. Boy, you kids wrecked me. And he's thinking about this, you know, and I don't know what it is. There's something about this story that appeals to him. Something about whether he sees something in this young man of God that he doesn't have anymore, because his life is filled with compromise, or I don't know what it is, but he hears the story. And the father said unto him, what way went he? For his sons had seen what way the man of God went, which came from Judah. And he said to his sons, saddle me the donkey. Get the car, boys, get the car. And they saddled him a donkey, and he rode thereon. And he went after the man of God, and he found him sitting under an oak. And he said unto him, Art thou the man of God that came from Judah? And he said, I am. And then he said unto him, Come home with me and eat bread. And he said, I may not return with thee, nor go in with thee, neither will I eat bread or drink water with thee in this place. For it was said to me by the word of the Lord, Thou shalt eat no bread, nor drink no water there, nor turn again to go by the way that thou camest. He shows up, and he says, Are you the man of God? Are you the man of God? What do you say to that?
Well, yes, I am the man of God. Thank you for noticing. I did have a great victory. Yes, I did. No, I cannot eat here with you. I must be going my way. But yes, I am that man of God.
I'll say this for the guy. He knows exactly what he was told. Nope, Lord told me to go say what I said, and I did. And he told me to go home and don't eat here. So, sorry, can't eat with you either. I got to be on my way, because that's what God told me. Now, this is a guy who just was obedient. And he, I'm sure, is just like all of us. At some point in that whole conversation, there was the, is that really you, God? Or am I just, you really want me to go and say what in front of the king? Are you kidding me? In front of everybody? Oh, I hope that's you. I mean, but he knew. So he goes there, and there's got to be some relief, some validation that comes from seeing the king go, and freeze up right in front of everybody, and the altar break open, and then you pray and he's healed. Yes, Lord, you did speak to me, and I remember everything you said, and you said don't eat here. He's got it all nailed down. The guy comes to him, are you the man of God? Yeah, I'm the man of God. That's what he says. I'm the man of God. I can't eat with you because these are the rules the Lord laid out for me as the man of God. Verse 18, he said unto him, well, I'm a prophet also as thou art. Well, no, I don't think you are, but you're a prophet maybe, but not as you are. And an angel spake to me by the word of the Lord, saying, Bring him back with thee into thine house, that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied unto him. So he went back with him, and he did eat bread in his house and drank water. He just got done saying, The Lord said to me, I shouldn't eat here. Well, yeah, but an angel said to me that you're supposed to do it. Okay. And he just goes. There was no, well, let's pray about it. You know, and I don't think it's by coincidence in Galatians chapter 1, verse 8, Paul says to a church that was being lured away from the word of God back towards legalism, but though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. And I said before, and so now I say again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which you've received, let him be accursed. Because you never know when an angel's going to show up, like Moroni, with some golden tablets and say, No, Joseph Smith, really, the churches today, they're all messed up, but you're going to start the one true church, and pretty soon your boy will be running for president. Now, I mean, that's how that started, an angel. We're told that Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. But this guy had the word of the Lord, plain and clear. You know, that it lied to. Somebody coming to you and saying, Well, I know the Lord said this. This is what the Lord said to me for you, you know. That manifests itself a lot in the church today as well. I was praying, and the Lord told me that you're supposed to be my wife. He told me that. I mean, and who are we to argue against the Lord? You're supposed to, you're the one for me. I prayed, and he told me flat out, you're the one. And that's when you're supposed to say, well, that's good, because I pray to him too, and I assume he'll probably let me know if that's supposed to be the case. You know, just because he told you anything doesn't mean anything to me, because you could have just had a bad piece of pepperoni and thought it was all from the Lord, when really it was just indigestion. This guy lied to him. Flat out. And are you the man of God? Yes, I am. Ends up going and doing what he said he wasn't going to do. What he said he wasn't going to do in front of all of the 10 tribes of the nation of Israel. When the Lord came, had him come and confront idolatry and people who were disobeying the word of the Lord and who were doing exactly what he'd said not to do, he had this guy stand up and make a public profession in front of all of them and says, No, that's wrong, and by the way, I'm not even going to eat with you people because it's so wrong. I'm out of here. Now somebody lies to him, and he says, Okay, I'll eat with you. So what has he just done? He's just compromised everything he said in front of all of those people and all of that sign because he said, you're not supposed to violate the word of the Lord by worshiping an idol. But I'm going to violate the word of God by eating where he told me not to eat. So now, what's the deal? It's okay for you to do it, but not me to do it? I don't understand. And he's completely compromised what he was told to do and what he publicly professed in front of everybody. It says, and it came to pass as they sat at the table that the word of the Lord came unto the prophet that brought him back. The old guy suddenly gets a prophecy. And he cried unto the man of God that came from Judah, saying, thus saith the Lord, for as much as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord and hast not kept the commandment which the Lord thy God commanded thee, but camest back and hast eaten bread and drunk water in the place of which the Lord did say unto thee, eat no bread and drink no water, thy carcass shall not come into the sepulchre of thy fathers. Any prophecy that talks about your carcass is probably not a good one to hear, especially at dinner. It's like, that's right, thus saith the Lord, you blew it for listening to this liar. And it's the liar who's telling you that now. All of a sudden, the Lord's speaking through him and saying, because you didn't listen, you're not even going to make it back to Judah. Your carcass is not going to be buried in the halls of your father. And it came to pass, after he had eaten bread and after he had drunk, that he saddled for him the donkey, to wit, for the prophet he had brought back. And when he was gone, a lion met him by the way and slew him. He gets killed by a lion. And his carcass was cast in the way. There's the carcass. And the donkey stood by it, and the lion also stood by the carcass. And behold, men passed by and saw the carcass cast in the way, and the lion standing by the carcass, and they came and told it in the city where the prophet dwelt. Because lions and donkeys don't hang out much. I don't know if you've noticed that, but they're not usually friends. They don't play together. When a lion kills something, it's usually followed by a lion eating something, but he doesn't. He just kills the guy and he leaves him laying there, and he's standing on one side and the donkey's on another. What does that say about you? I mean, I've seen gravestones with lions on them and stuff. I've never seen a donkey on the top of a gravestone. It's all, you know, and of course you look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter tells us that be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. And now this guy is dead, laying there. It's the same guy that everybody saw is now laying dead for everybody to see, with a lion, testimony to the fact that he was either destroyed by the enemy or devoured by a righteous God, the lion of the tribe of Judah. And on the other side of him is a jackass, testifying that he was like one, I guess. I mean, because that's... what else can you say? And everybody saw it and said, there's something not right about that. And so everybody's talking about it. It says, and when the prophet that brought him back from the way heard whereof, he said, it's the man of God who was disobedient unto the word of the Lord. Therefore the Lord has delivered him unto the lion, which hath torn him and slain him, according to the word of the Lord which he spake unto him. And he spake unto his son, saying, saddle me the donkey. And they saddled him, and he went and found his carcass cast in the way, and the donkey and the lion standing by the carcass. Are you sure this is it? Pretty sure. There's still a lion and a donkey standing there. Boys, go get that. Ugh, I don't know about that. Here, kitty, kitty. You know, I mean, what do you do? You're real careful, but you figure if he isn't eating him, he's probably not gonna. Said the lion had not eaten the carcass nor torn the donkey. And the prophet took up the carcass of the man of God, his carcass, and he laid it upon the donkey, and he brought it back, and the old prophet came to the city to mourn and bury him. And he laid his carcass in his own grave, and they mourned over him, saying, alas, my brother. And it came to pass, after he had buried him, that he spake to his son, saying, when I am dead, then bury me in the sepulchre wherein the man of God is buried. Lay my bones beside his bones. For the saying which he cried by the word of the Lord against the altar in Bethel, and against all the houses of the high places which are in the cities of Samaria, shall surely come to pass. You wonder what effect that have on the old prophet after he saw that happen. Was he the same guy, the lion prophet, after he saw somebody be disobedient to the word of the Lord and get killed? He takes him and he buries him there in his own grave. And it's interesting, when you get into 2 Kings 23, when Josiah comes through, and remember the prophecy said that he's going to kill the priests and that he's going to burn men's bones on those altars before he tears them down. He digs up all the graves of the priests that have been doing that over the years, burning. And he comes to a grave and he's like, what's with that grave right there? Who's in that? And the people tell him, that's the bones of the prophet that had said you were going to come do this. And he says, we'll leave that one alone. And he goes on. And so that is referenced to 300 and something years later. 300 and something years later, everybody still knows, oh yeah, that's the guy who got in front of everybody and the Lord used him mightily. And then he violated the word of the Lord after he'd made a point of saying it to everybody else. And he got consumed by a lion and guarded by a donkey. Now you'd think, after something like that happened, Jeroboam would be a new man. Verse 33, after this thing, Jeroboam returned not from his evil way, but made again of the lowest of the people, priests of the high places, whomsoever would. He consecrated him, and he became one of the priests of the high places. And this thing became sin into the house of Jeroboam, even to cut it off and to destroy it from the face of the earth. You wonder, how do you justify that? Don't you remember you were doing this thing, and the prophet of the Lord showed up, and you remember the whole arm thing where you shrunk up, you couldn't pull it back, and you had to ask God to forgive, you know, to fix you and all that? You know what happened? I'm personally probably pretty guaranteed about it. Is the news of that guy who compromised and got consumed, came back, and Jeroboam said, well, see, I guess our calf God is the right God because he took care of that fellow, didn't he? I'm going to listen to what he says because he didn't even listen to what he said. And look what happened to him. Scary, but the same thing will happen to you and I. If you and I are the one who claim to be the man or woman of God, and then, you know, after running our mouth publicly, fall, we will have effect on people like Jeroboam. Harden their hearts. I don't want to be that guy. And so they continue, and this thing gets worse and worse, and it's going to be ultimately the destruction of Israel in the north. As Jesus is going to say to the woman at the well, the time will soon be and now is that whoever worships me must worship me in spirit and in truth. You can't just play it any old way you want. It isn't convenience worship. It isn't, well, I like to go to God this way, out under the trees, smoking my favorite weed. That's not worshiping God. That's worshiping yourself and putting yourself up as God. You know, the thing that jumped out at me of that, and it's a strange story, but partial obedience is disobedience. He did part of what he was supposed to do, but then he was lied to. Big deal. He was deceived. That's why we're told to study to show ourselves approved, so that we can rightly divide the word of truth. Why we're told to be careful. Paul warned night and day with tears that after his departing, grievous wolves would come in trying to take into the flock, and not only that, men from within the church would rise up and try to lead people astray after themselves. We're told not to be deceived, and there's only one way to not be deceived, and that's be a man or a woman who knows the word, because God is never going to violate his word. Amen. Lord, how many times have we been that man of God, I'm the man of God, and then do the very thing that we promised we'd never do? Lord, and yet we're still here. No donkey, no lion yet. Father, I pray that you would cause us to resolve in our heart, Lord, to seek you with our whole heart. Help us to be men and women of the Word, not to be deceived, not to be pulled astray. Lord, help us not to after giving witness to others, be cast away as reprobates because we blow it. When there's too many people looking for an excuse, I don't want to be that excuse. I pray you would pour your Spirit out on us, that he would hold us fast, Lord, and really make your word come alive. Give us a hunger for your word. And Lord, please, by your strength, help us not to turn from it. Pray you'd bless my brothers and sisters. In Jesus' name, amen. Grace and peace, guys.